Okay, and we're back with Donald Lazier. And at this point, Mr. Lazier, you were experiencing some physical problems with a bad knee. And at one point, you wound in after February 1945, you wound up at a military hospital on the Eastern Front, which must have been an interesting experience with the advancing Russians and whatnot. What were your impressions at that time of that place?
Well, I didn't quite end up in a in a hospital. I was in physically in a hospital, but they wouldn't allow me to stay in the hospital. The young German soldiers got legs blowing off, arms, it was a god-awful mess. It was a shambles of a hospital, and certainly there wasn't any room there for me. So I finally ended up in a transient camp.
Presumably people of all nationalities and armies and whatnot all thrown together in this,
yes,
in this transient
but,
camp.
You're only allowed to stay in there 3 or 4 days, and then you went out back out in the march. But I managed to stay in there for right up until the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. Right up until April, April 28th, I believe it was.
Wait a minute, on that point, then I was captured by the Russians.
Liberated and captured at the same time, so to speak.
yes, liberated by one, but you're shot if you were more than 50 meters from the perimeter of the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Did I show you that pipe?
Yes, and the dagger too. Unfortunately, it's a tape machine and not a camera. Otherwise, people would be quite impressed with the dagger. That's for sure. As you say, you literally were under, I guess, what amounted to a house arrest as far as the Russians were concerned. What was that like? The knowledge, obviously, that fairly soon that the camp would be once liberated, but in a sense also captured by the Russians. What was the feeling amongst the POWs and yourself at that time?
Well, we thought we'd be liberated, naturally. And what amazed me was the ingenuity of the Russians. Living off the land. Their tanks, just by the grace of God, I was lying on a palliasse and somebody opened up with a machine gun and just scattered maybe 100, 150 shots. And they missed me by like that.
Inches.
Just inches. Somebody else, I forget who it was, and myself went out as a welcoming committee of two. The tanks pulled up on the other side of the compound. And we cut they cut the wire. So we went out through the wire and...
At this point, the German guards are long gone, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah.
They put on civilian clothes and... Well, not long gone. There was only about a half a day. They cut it very fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd say about 8 hours before the Russians came through. And it... We sat there. What really amazed me the Russian tanks were driven by women.
Is that right?
With leather skirts and leather jack boots.
Mm-hmm. Which I guess freed up all the men for ground troops and infantry and whatnot.
Well, I don't know about the rest of the... somebody told me. And anyway, there were women, but there were also men there. Because a tank crew might... Well, I don't know how many they had. We had five. Mm-hmm. And the Churchills. But they were lined up. We were sitting on the tank. And there were four tanks sitting there and with their guns. And they had some schnapps. And we were trading cigarettes and chocolate. And they smelled, my God, they hadn't had a bath in that hollow.
Probably since Moscow.
Anyway, somebody, whether it was drunkenness or what, pulled the trigger, and the shot went right over our heads. Well, that started the last bit of resistance by the Germans. And they opened up with fixed lines of fire, with about every fourth being a tracer. At least you could see where the gun, the firing was coming from. And they raked a pattern about 20 yards, I'd say. And there we were, not even a tin hat. Mm-hmm. Well, the tank crew, they just buttoned down. So they left us to, and the only thing that happened, I fell and I scratched the palm of my hand on some barbed wire. It's unbelievable.
As you say, without not even the benefit of a helmet or anything.
No.
It's really quite amazing. How eventually the Germans disappear from the scene at this point. How did the Russians treat you, the POWs? Were you considered to be just that, transients or allies? How did they
look? Just ignored us. They swept over us and kept on going. Mm-hmm. And we were left behind. That's when... Oh, there was one scene that comes back periodically to me. The night before the Russians came in, liberated us, or whatever you call it, there were some Italians, and they raided the Red Cross Center, and it was like something out of a Hollywood picture. This fellow, that's a tremendous chest and about, I'd say maybe 6 feet, and stripped to the waist, and just glistening in sweat, and holding something on fire, walking down in front of this horde of yelling, screaming POWs. That's something that stayed in my mind over the years. Mm-hmm. It was something, just actually a Hollywood picture. But by this time, we'd I'd suggested to these boys from Arnhem that the sergeant major, he was the senior NCO in the camp, so he was in charge of the Red Cross parcels. Mm-hmm. So I suggested to them that he should have his own private office made out of cardboard from the Red Cross boxes, mm-hmm. which he did, and then he called us in, come over and have a cup of tea, but wear our greatcoats. And he gave each one of us Red Cross box.
Is that right? No kidding.
And then I'd suggested to him as well that watches, rings, anything of this nature. And he started getting these people off when they came off the work parties. And he was taking rings in exchange for a half a Red Cross parcel of wristwatches. Mm-hmm. He ended up with a barrack box at the foot of his bed full of jewelry. And I heard afterwards that he was dishonorably discharged.
Sure,
he was,
that's an offense, sure, under military law.
Yes, and ended up doing 20 years hard labor, the same as this informer, the two of them.
Both British?
No, one was in the Essex Scottish. Now, I'm not sure whether it was Canadian or American, where so many of them came up. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There was one union organizer, but there may be.
No kidding. Oh, appropriate. What was the process, briefly, what was the process by which you finally did get back to the West End, into Western Europe? What was the process by which you got back to the Western Europe? Did the Russians help expedite you through, or did you have to get back all on your own?
No, they kept... No, they basically ignored us. Mm-hmm. Food ran out because they're living off the land, the fighting troops.
Sure, sure.
So you can't fault them. That's when I picked up the bayonet over there. Mm-hmm. When I went down to, I'd heard there was this goods train. So I went down there, and that's where I picked up a number of things, something to protect myself. This one, most of the Russians were drunk. It was a wine car. And that had schnapps, and they had everything. And they call it a wine car, but and just by the grace of God, I came around this box car, and I ran smack bang into this Russian, and he said, "Vo es Americano," and he started to pull his. He had a 45. He started to pull that, and I said, "Nein, Engländer, nein, vo es." Canadisher, because he had the gun out. And Canadisher, good, comrade. I heaved a sigh of relief, and he put the gun away, and he had a magnum of champagne in his other hand. So he come and see me. So I went along with him over to a tree, and he wrapped the bottle and knocked the top off and put it up and handed it to me. So the two of us sat there and he smelled like hell.
Yeah, oh God, I can imagine.
And he gave me a piece of rayon, a scarf that so many of them wore. And I think it's still upstairs.
It's interesting too to note the reaction even then, the fact, the difference between what he thought you were an American And when he found out you were a Canadian, even then, you could see the enmity. And that is very interesting in itself. And then eventually, of course, you do make your way back to the West. And this is, I assume, basically all on your own. Without, obviously, the Russians didn't help.
No, the Americans, pardon me. The Americans finally sent transportation in and took us up to Schwerin.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, we went back down to Lüneburg and handed over to the British. And the British, we were there for at the outside 36 hours, maybe 24, and we arrived back in Blighty on the 19th of May, my birthday.
Well, certainly a wonderful birthday gift, that's for sure. I'm sure, no doubt, celebrated in style that night, too.
Well, they met us at Coventry Arundel Airport, the south coast of England, and they had a tent and a red carpet and tea.
How appropriate.
With on a saucer, not a mug, but a cup of tea, and these girls walking around handing out cookies. And before you went in, they took a delouser and down here and down there and down there. And then you walked in and had your cup of tea.
Probably no doubt badly needed though by that point, I would imagine.
But,
certainly an interesting experience. Not only were you fortunate enough to survive the POW experience, but also as one of the members of DF too. I guess you'd have to consider yourself quite fortunate to come through both of those in relatively intact shape.
Well, I looked upon it as a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
That so many are bitter, but I learned a hell of a lot over there, how to, during air raids, not panicking.
Mm-hmm. How to maintain your wits and then think and keep you cool under pressure, I guess, would be one of the...
Well, there's another thing that is, I think of periodically, is when this goods train going down to find something to defend myself with, and came across these German women, and they all had scarves on where they'd been raped by the Russians, and then walked on through a clearing. They were petrified to even see a man, and walked into a little clearing a little farther on, maybe 100 yards, where this mother and father and two little children have been hanged on four sapling trees, and cut them down with that Bennett, and got out of there in a hurry. In a peaceful little glade there in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And, the sun was shining.
And yet such a terrible scene.
Those are the things that... but as you say, I think I was extremely fortunate to come out of it as well as I did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And not only physically, obviously psychologically, you came out of it, you know, perhaps a little stronger, if nothing else, even.
Yes. The people of Britain took a tremendous beating. I spent a lot of time up in London with this Jack's Club. And, as a matter of fact, Bing Crosby and Bob Hope were both in there and waited table one time.
But, no kidding.
I didn't see them. I wasn't there that particular night. But, a lot of memories, a lot of good memories, a lot of bad ones. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Overall, though, I assume, I take it that you don't consider those years in to be wasted, as some do.
No. I think it's very similar to a university education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you look on the positive side.
Right.
But there's one person that there's an incident that when I was in the black market, and this was in 8B, and I was going over to the WAG compound and traded a can of butter for a can of meat. And took this fellow along with me, and to get to the person in charge, I had to walk the full length of the hut. And all these East Indians, and finally get into the boss man's place and spot the butter for the meat, and he said, "How much for the boy?" And this fellow was—he was dark, with black curly hair and a malnutrition stomach. He ended up working for the federal government in Vancouver here, and I mentioned this to him one time, and he was quite embarrassed. And then another time on the phone, he brought the thing up himself and laughed about it. But he's bitter, very bitter. But I found that so many, they lost all initiative.
And you think that was probably one thing that helped you to get through it, was the fact that you didn't?
I kept my mind active, endeavoring to escape. Mentally, and played a lot of poker. I don't think it was wasted time at all. But the one thing I did notice after the war, that the vast majority gravitated to government jobs, security, liquor store, post office, customs, tax department. But not too many in the tax department. Most of those were, the others all seemed to, they wanted security.
Crave the security that they didn't maybe, obviously they didn't feel during those years.
Yeah.
That's a good point, I think, something that you don't really think about too much. Well, I think, Mr. Lazier, we're pretty much at the end of the interview, so on behalf of the University of Victoria History Department, I would just like to thank you for taking the time out to do the interview with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.